Hi, this is Iris Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen. Dreams do come true. And actually today, we have with us one of my dreams come true to participate and give service with and know and work with for the highest good of all. One of the pioneers in the new thought, the creative thinking movement, and light bringers that are so needed on this planet now. I am honored and blessed and grateful and delighted to welcome you, Patricia Sun.
Well, thank you so much, Iris.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Pardon?
Thank you so much for being here. You know, I feel like for a long time I've wanted to interview you, and I just felt like, I don't know, you wouldn't be interested or something. And so I am just thrilled that we're doing this today, and I'm thrilled that I have an opportunity to support what you're doing in the world. That is so important.
Well, thank you so much. And you know, Iris, there was a time back there where I was doing many, many workshops, and one of the rules that I had, I never said no. Small or large, far or near, anyone asked me, I would come.
Mm-hmm.
So I see it the way most people do, the issues of fame and attention and so on. I believe there's a flow, and I'm here. I'm here to share what I know and to listen to other people and to hear what's needed. And I think that it's part of a new kind of thinking. I used to open every workshop saying, I believe we're in the midst of an evolutionary leap.
Yee-haw!
And
we are.
This evolutionary leap is actually a new kind of thinking. It's our brain is actually changing how it works. It's maturing and developing. And we're kind of all in a crisis right now, a good crisis, one of those danger opportunity things, to use the Chinese ideograph and for a crisis. There is a huge opportunity because when we're shifting from one level of awareness to another, there's kind of an explosion of input, and people are pretty overloaded. And everything is, all the buttons are getting pushed, and that's good. Because we solve things, we grow, we expand, we develop through those opportunities or button pressings. Some of them seem awful sometimes, but the truth of the matter is that there's nothing that human beings do that we can't learn from. And when we learn with what you've stressed so much in your opening, the goodwill, the caring, the desire for it to be the highest good.
That's, for everyone.
That's for everyone. That's very powerful. And everyone is every human being. It's the life on the planet. It's the planet itself. And we are doing it. We're actually going through it, even though it's a little messy.
It's like having 15 two-year-olds in your living room.
Well, that's easy. The world is really doing a lot, and people, I think, are learning to see with new eyes. And it's only through the sort of stress of things not going the way we want, or through making mistakes, or through being lied to or robbed or hurt in some way sometimes, what happens is that we have to keep expanding no matter how conscious you are. You can always become more conscious. And you can always become more aware. And you can
wait a minute. I have a but there. You know how you were talking about people being overwhelmed?
Yeah.
Sometimes there's been some days where if I find out about one more thing that's messed up about the world that somebody is doing to somebody or some other horror or atrocity, it's like, I will just, it's like, don't tell me one more of those today. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like,
I feel that way. I think most people actually feel that way. I mean, the only people who don't feel that way are kind of people who get energized by sort of piling on to somebody else, you know, having somebody to blame. And if you don't want to do that, then it's just very overwhelming.
Well, I also have a cure for that and a protection for that, which is just to, I say everything I become aware of, I see or become aware of, that is less than the perfection of God, I call a permanent vortex of the fiery Christ blue lightning purity from the great central sun magnet, Archangel Michael, to cut life free, and the violet flame to form a permanent, eternal, ever-expanding vortex. And then we're calling Ascend a Master intervention in that. And I think each person sort of has their way of weaving light into that and raising it and being part of the evolutionary change because we see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I still go, don't show me one more today. I mean, and I'm sorry to be resistant. I think that's one of the things that, you know, I really need to give up. So you sort of pointed that out right away. It's kind of a bad attitude.
Well, you know,
isn't it?
One of the things when I had my radio show on Wisdom, I got hundreds of emails at the end when I left, and it was very pleasing and heartwarming to see how many people said, I don't know how I'm going to be able to listen to the news anymore because you could keep me informed and I never got depressed. I always could see what was hopeful. I could always see where something else could be done. So I do believe that there is a way to look at difficulties and take them as fertilizer and
and bury them with the compost.
Yeah, make great compost out of it and grow great flowers and fruit and health. And that's, you know, it can sound a little Pollyannish, but I...
No, it isn't, Patty. I mean, Patricia, I also... Patty Diane Cota Robles is a friend of mine, and some of her things are very similar to yours, and I sort of... I have you in mind in stature as these great and benevolent goddesses, and... So I ask you, you must hate being called Patty, and I just ask your forgiveness, Patricia. But I wanted to say about you, it wasn't your fame, and I don't call it Pollyannishness. It's you are an opener of the greatest possibilities.
Thank you.
And that is why I wasn't sure I was, I don't know, worthy to be of support of your work.
Oh my goodness!
For a long time, so
everybody,
I am so thankful to be doing this.
You know, just by caring is the highest form of validation of worthiness. You know, it's Jesus talked about it, Buddha talked about it. It's service, caring, wanting to make things better, helping is. Very high consciousness. It's a very high level. And again, not always our culture's criteria, but it is. And any time, you know, and people aren't perfect in the sense of sometimes being able to do that all the time and so on, but caring to do it, having that in your intelligence as a direction to go is really the most important thing. Because from that, all healing can come. From that, all new ideas can be sought. So it's very important. I respect it.
There's this thing that you do with your eyes. And when you do it, I feel like you bring through this great flash of light from the great central sun, and you are appropriately named.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know exactly what you're doing then, but it is from the angels. It is utterly charming, and it is a service that you're not giving in words.
Yes, that's true. There is something like that that happens. What I experience is, it is It is love. It is clarity of awareness, and it's connection. And when we combine love, knowledge, and connection, it is something that's almost, it's physiological, it's spiritual, it's psychological, it's mental, it's God touching us. So we do feel God touching us.
Yes.
And
okay.
That's something that's very real. And, you know, again, have to be careful about saying those things. People can, you know, talk is cheap. People say a lot of stuff.
What? I didn't hear all of that.
I said, you know, talk is cheap, and people say a lot of stuff, especially these days, some of it very good words, but they don't live it. And by living it, I don't mean you have to be perfect. I mean by living it, you have to earnestly care about it within yourself. So it, that's what makes the light. That's what makes the energy come from one body to another. And it's very real. And it's one of the things, if you work with children, they are so aware of it. And when adults are being dishonest or superficial or somehow negating or avoiding something that's very obvious.
Choosing to be dead and living behind a clay mask.
And they know it.
Excuse me.
That's
what you're talking about, though.
Yes, there's this precious expression that children have. It's quite universal. And it's puzzled. And if their eyes are kind of open and they look a little sad and they're puzzled, like, what are you saying?
Yeah, why are we saying this and we're doing this? And the other thing is that adults don't care how they appear to children, so they'll do this outrageous, horrible stuff in front of kids that they would never do in front of their friends, you know?
Exactly.
And so I just remember going constantly when I was a child, and why are we doing this?
That's right.
Or you?
Yeah.
But I also wanted to know, why, I think the joy of living had gone in all of the grown-ups I knew as I was growing up. And it was because they were doing what everybody else expected them to do and just sort of going through the motions and not really touching anyone and not really connecting with anyone and not really telling the truth and not asking for what they wanted. And just sort of, you know, instead of taking every opportunity for transformation, they were just sort of riding it out, Patricia.
Yep.
And I couldn't bear that. I couldn't bear it.
Well, that's good. It's good you couldn't bear it, because it's healthy you can't bear it. And
so you're saying a certain amount of insanity on this planet is very, very good.
Yes.
Insanity is an appropriate response to this planet?
Well, you know, it's not so much to the planet. I think that what has happened is that human beings have become, I don't know what kind of language to use. Because we're so immature as a species and we have these magnificent brains that we actually use against ourselves, our own selves, our own person, and we use it against other human beings and other animals and even life itself. We use our intelligence in a simplistic way. I call it lately cartoon thinking. We think of things all sort of superficial and a little bit fake.
Or sort of imitate the soaps on TV.
Yes. And so instead of really slowing down, not needing to be right, knowing it's much more powerful to be good than to be right, when we come from that place, we're slower to jump to conclusions, we're reflective, we're tender, we're receptive, we listen, and we respond with goodwill. And that's sanity. And when we don't do that, we are mentally damaged, deranged, ill, not so sane. I don't know. You know, I don't want to.
Yeah, you know, I know exactly what you're saying, and it reminds me of something I've been reading, The Infinite Way, by Joel Goldsmith, Mm-hmm. And he says, you need to learn to trust God. And the way you know how much you trust God is you see God in every person and you trust God in them. You are innocent
You know, that's self-fulfilling, too, because that's a very, very, very important concept, because like the Sufis say, you know, the God in me salutes the God in you. Namaste.
Yes.
Salute that salutation. Well, it is healthy making. It is salubrious to say and to see.
I love that word.
Yes. The God in me seeing the God in you. Because when we do that, and I don't mean in a grandiose way or exaggerated way. I just mean it runs all the time in the background of your mind that we're all a part of God. And, you know, when people get down on themselves or other people, I always like to say, well, you have to remember you're a part of God, but at the same time, you have to remember you're a very, very, very small part. God is very large, and we are very small, but we're part of God. So it's a paradox where we have that divineness in us. It is there to be, I almost want to say, we almost need to, like, live it or ride it or move with it, embrace it into ourselves.
And fan it into a flame that joins with all other flames everywhere, the light of divinity.
Well, you know, that's a great meditation because it takes you out of the yes buts and all the difficulties, and it puts it into a metaphor that is ancient and archetypal, that of light being the experience internally of God. And so, of course, it's awesomely powerful and very, very good thing to do. The one thing that's important, I always think, is not to overdo saying it, not that you can't say it, it's good to say, but try to just kind of quietly keep cultivating it.
To say what? I got a little confused there. I sort of went off on one other thing you said.
Okay. Well, it's when we are dealing in life, everyday life.
Yeah.
We have issues and problems and things come up and communications go on. But if you can, especially in the difficult moments or the fun moments, keep reminding yourself that everyone is a part of God and there's a wondrous thing developing all the time. It never lets you get too scared. It never lets you get mean. It never lets you get jealous. It never lets you not have many doors open in your mind for understanding. So it's a powerful thing to consider, and it's actually more powerful to consider it on an ongoing basis than to talk about it so much. I mean, I'm not trying to say not talk about it. We need to talk about it because people need to hear about it, and God knows we're short of it. So that's very important. I just mean to say that there is a great power that's quiet, that can blossom from the inside out as we think of it and remind each other in a serious way that the God in me salutes the God in you, and that there is the part of you that wants this to be real, that wants this to be received, that wants people to live it, that wants to be free to be in a world where that level of connection and warmth and respect and empathy and synergy, growth, creativity, problem solving together can happen. And that is the evolutionary leap, is that when we allow that. But it's so much been said, you know, one of the things I've been noticing so much in the last 15 years is that the things that I taught 35 years ago and for about 20 years very solidly, I hear them all mainstream now. They weren't mainstream.
Yeah.
They weren't mainstream when I was teaching them, and they came from my own personal experiences and difficulties and realizations and stories that I use to explain them. And I hear other people saying them, and there's people strutting across stages and saying these words, which, of course, I like the words. they're my words, and they're words that came to me through inspiration, but I am shocked at how a funny thing happens. A certain amount of people get the power of the words, and that's wonderful, and it moves on. And a certain amount of people don't really want to get the words for real. They just want to have the right words. And so they get the
right words. Doesn't that piss you off?
But not really live it.
What? I'm sorry. What?
So they get to have the right words, but not really live it. So they get to sound right, but not actually make the shift within. And that's what's sort of the epidemic in the world right now. Not just with consciousness thought of that we're speaking of, but almost at every single level, every human institution, whether it's medicine or education or politics or science or just even relationships between people, there's this facade level of being fake, and it's about appearances. And of course, it's causing a lot of stress because it's empty. It's like
that's what makes people depressed.
Why can't people what?
That's what makes people depressed.
That is exactly right. That's what I was trying to get to. Exactly.
That is why so many people are on antidepressants.
That's right.
And I just want to say here that antidepressants are the worst thing a person can do for themselves, both physically, emotionally, spiritually, and in every other way.
We know the reason why.
What?
You know the reason why. Because all they do is chemically disrupt you. And they always like to say when people are depressed that they have chemical imbalances. Well, they have chemical imbalances because they're under stress. That's what happens. You get chemically balanced. Your body is the best pharmacy creator of any kind of drug or chemical that you need, but it works in synergy with a huge, complex dynamic that is the life of your body. It's very interactive, the way hormones and chemicals and cells and nutrition and everything interact in your body. Just the body to be in homeostasis, which seems like still, is like it's a fury of activity to keep you calm and balanced. The body is working all the time. That's good. When we think black-white and we think about things shouldn't die, or I always like to say, you know, if you're sitting in a chair, you're killing millions of cells in your bottom. If you're walking on the sidewalk, you're killing cells in your hips, your feet, and your calves. You cannot be alive without parts dying all the time. That's just replenishment. So the focus not has to be not on so much what's bad, but what's good. In almost everything, it's not that we don't take note of what's not okay. You do need to do that. But once you take note of what's not okay, then you have to look toward what inspires what makes healthy.
What do I want?
That's right.
What would make my heart sing? What would be fun here? What would make me feel like getting up in the morning?
One of the things I used to say about depression, and there's so many interesting words that we use, depression is a depression, a damping down of your energy. And you get depressed when in some area of your life you are not actualizing yourself.
You hold yourself back.
You're holding yourself back out of belief that society won't like it, or your conditioning won't like it, or you're just afraid, or whatever it could be. But at some level, you're holding yourself back. And when that becomes chronic and it becomes unthinkable to do what is necessary, then you become chronically depressed. And drugs only help by numbing you out and actually, in a way, making it worse. They slightly set you back, but they make you look sort of okay. You can work like a robot better.
Yeah, and then sort of what happens is people do that, then they sit in front of the TV, and the television has been almost taken over by drug companies.
So, well, you know, one could laugh and say, you know, that's like a little bit paranoid to say, but the reason I laugh is because between insurance companies, drug companies, and oil companies, who are we? And what are we doing?
And central banking.
And central banking. Okay.
Well, you know, I think we have to ask some questions. You know, I wanted to kind of address the war on the environment with you. And I see it as sort of, you know, we've been saying some killing is okay, some poison is okay, you know, a certain amount of rat balls in our food is okay, you know, and it's not okay.
Well, you see, the problem is we forgot what good is and what wholesome is. There is going to be death, because that's the one thing, but there doesn't have to be unconscious, cruel, life-defaming death. There is death that runs its course. There's things that live and die, everything, everything. All life lives off other life. That is just a fact of our planet. That's the way it works. But that does not mean that we have license to be thoughtless or cruel or unkind or greedy by taking more than we need. I mean, it's often quoted and maybe over-romanticized, but it is a great truth about the way the American Indians lived in terms of knowing it was essential to be grateful. If you hunted a deer down, you thanked it for its life. You wasted nothing of it. That gratitude, that respect, that focus puts you in alignment with what is good. And the problem in our cartoon kind of thinking, simplistic, simple thing, is killing is all right or it's not all right. Well, if it's not all right, I don't know, you can't breathe and you can't walk and you can't do anything. So then if you say, well, then it's all right, then that means you can kill anybody, kill anything, do anything, poison anything. And the other simplistic way is like, well, it's business. That is so permeated American culture mind that business is like a god. It's like it's like some kind of catchphrase, which means you can do anything. I remember watching on TV this woman, I don't know, one of the many blonde interviewers, and she was talking to someone about something they had done that was really quite atrocious. I can't remember the details, I'm sorry, but she started to be shocked and say, well, that isn't too good. And then she stopped herself and she says, well, you're a businessman and you have to make a living, so I guess that's why you have to do that.
Well, you know, that's a conflict of interests, and we really have to join together as a win-win world. If somebody loses something, that is not a gain for me.
And you know, if somebody loses something, not only is it not a gain for you, if somebody loses something, we have to pay attention and to see that they're doing okay. What else do they need? What else could we do together that would be creative and interesting that would bring them back into the flow of life? So it's just a different way of thinking. It seems we've had to make it get very, very, very messy so we can realize that war is a failure of human intelligence. And that there's nothing wrong with capitalism, that ethics wouldn't cure.
Mm-hmm.
We have to keep not thinking so simplistically and move to the very essence of human dignity and respect and goodwill.
Yep.
And it makes us kind.
Yes.
Well,
I wanted to go back to a couple things you said. One is, when, like you said, the Native Americans apologized to the deer when they killed it. I don't eat any meat myself, and I hardly eat any eggs. Like, I'll eat eggs if they're in cupcakes, and once in a while. But I've really gotten that I don't want to participate anything. I don't wear leather, and I don't want to participate in anything that has caused pain and suffering.
Yes, I understand.
And so, my cats have been very unappreciative of vegan food, and so I feed them baby food, and I'll give them a jar of baby food. I apologize to the chicken, and then I ask for a divine solution. I call the violet flame into that. I call on the law of forgiveness, and I ask for a divine solution, because anyone that's ever held a baby chick in their hands knows how precious they are. I mean, we know that, and I think that one of the things that makes people not alive is closing themselves off from the feeling of that.
Yes, indeed. Quite right.
And we need that tenderness that we feel when we hold a baby chick in our hands.
That's baby anything.
Baby bunnies,
baby,
you know.
Human. And, you know, we're abusing children at a rate that's just horrific. And the reason is because people have been abused and they don't want to face the pain inside their bodies. And the trust, the innocence, we've been killing innocence, and we've been making people hard because we are feeling powerless, and we're thinking style of thinking. Well, you can't get there from here. You can accrue stuff, you can dominate people, you can become a Hitler, you can beat people up, but you end miserable anyway, and you make a lot of misery all along the way. So it doesn't work. Short time control over, power over. And you are quite right that that tenderness of holding a baby chick or holding a child or even just...
Knowing a little calf or a lamb.
A little... Oh, yeah. I know. They're wonderful.
They're like puppies. They're the sweetest.
Happy to be alive.
They're the sweetest, and I think anything, you know, I am doing this to draw forth your creative way of thinking, because I want to apply it to stuff like this, Patricia. Like, for instance, when I come up against the numbers that they're spending on the war and pretending in the press that opposition to the war has gone down, and then I hear something like, I heard that the solar credits, the solar credits were expiring at the end of this year.
Oh,
well,
so
why
cool,
aren't we putting our money into... All of that government money could be put into constructive purposes of cleaning up the environment. If that was done for 1 year, we would be out of danger of global warming.
You know,
1 year by one government.
20 years ago, we had like 55% tax credits for solar, and people were buying solar like crazy, and then they cut it out. One of the things that happened is that we have lost our democracy because we are not paying attention as citizens, and we don't...
Too many people are on antidepressants and watching television and believing what's said on the news.
Well, it's also getting very poor education at school, so we don't know how...
To take care of ourselves.
...are all licensed by the people. They are all owned by the people. All corporations that exist are just entities that are made up by human beings and given license to exist by the citizens of the country. They have corporate licenses. They can be changed, they can be modified, they can be taken away. We act as though we have no power because we are not awake enough to be confident enough to investigate how things work and say what's true in the face of a lot of resistance. But, you know, if 10,000 people suddenly, out of the many millions in the United States, suddenly, kindly, calmly, competently, just start saying what's not okay, and I think of, like, Martin Luther King, when he calmly, patiently said, it's true he got firebombed, it's true he got beat up, it's true he got put in jail, and he did so much with his courage. But there were many people who helped him who had courage. There were many people who stood by him that had courage. And all together, that energy made people move out of the psychological defense of rage and fear and racism and the absolute foolishness of it, and move to a place where they started to see themselves. And above all, what we all need is the room and the space, the goodwill and the incentive even to see ourselves. And that's why having shows like this, talking, encouraging people, it's not that everybody has to agree with everything, but there is an energetic truth, a reality, that is the very one you were talking about, holding the chick, and, you know,
it's heaven
for the child. This is what makes things change.
And it's committing to that tenderness. It's committing to that tenderness instead of that armoredness. You know, it's committing to that. Here near where I live, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's near the BART station in Lafayette, and there's a hill that has white crosses on it, and it has a cross for every American who has died in the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
Well, remember over there they call it the American War. That's what they called it in Vietnam. And I feel the same compassion for Iraqi mothers, for Pakistani mothers. A mom is a mom.
Well, you know, when Ronald Reagan was president, one people that were homeless on the streets were Vietnam veterans and their dependents. We have left all kinds of horrible wounds that keep getting labeled as somebody's lazy, or they're unpredictable, or they're just evil, or we put these labels on people to box them, to categorize them and dismiss them. But there's a reason. I mean, even George Bush, who probably has done more harm to this country than any other single person, with help from his friends. But he is a wounded person. He is not a mentally well person. So there's no reason to hate George Bush. But there is reason to see what he has done. Because if we try to make being ruthless or sadistic powerful or impressive, when it is actually sad, weak, depressing, and mentally not well. We have got our collective criteria all mixed up. And because of that, we suffer. And we hurt our own children. We hurt ourselves. And I do think that part of the great change that's happening is that we have to be more authentic, more honest, more earnest to make things wholesome and healthy. And when we encounter dysfunction, we do have to say, I think this is dysfunctional because, and what could we do to fix that? Assuming that the God in you is talking to the God in the other person, they would like to change it, but they don't want to lose their power, they don't want to lose their self-importance, they don't want to lose their money, they don't want to lose their fame or their getting attention. And this is the weakness of our culture.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you there for a minute. I want to know, Alyssa, are you hearing Patricia well? I don't know if she's...
I hope you can hear me.
Speak up a little, Patricia.
Well, how is that? Is that
better?
That's better.
Oh, that's better, yes.
Good, I'll get just closer to the mic. I think really what's happening is that we can do all the little stop gaps we want. We can bring up different issues. Many folks will bring up, you know, different strokes for different folks. Well, different people will bring up different issues and different aspects of things, and that's all well and good. But the truth of the matter is, at some point, we collectively have to realize we've been immature, that we have valued, and we say people have the wrong values and so on, but it's all sort of a kind of secretive gloat. There's still, you know, this terrible, I think of different people on television who are all supposed to be helpers, you know, psychological helpers. I don't want to mention names. But they're always bullying people, and they're always saying good things that they picked up from other people. So they do say good things, but then they mix it in with insincerity, with domination, with ridicule, and with often falling short of real substantive change, because what they are interested in is the appearance of being enlightened or smart or helpful, and they're not interested in being enlightened, smart, or helpful.
You know what? I have a little bit different take on that, and what it is. They would like to be that, but they identify with their ego and not their God self. So then they operate as it to do what they think is expected of them, because it'll get agreement, validation, points, fame, approval, money.
Well, you know what? I think that's a rationalization that many start out with.
Uh-huh.
But in my experience, the people I'm talking about, they've all got millions now, some billions.
Uh-huh.
And they have, if it weren't just what you said,
uh-huh,
you know, if that's all it was, then you'd say, well, God, now I'm here, I've got the money, I've got the platform, why don't I self-correct myself some?
Yeah, and what could I give with this power, this authority, this money?
Why don't I bring in the people who really had these ideas? Why don't I be kind to the people I'm speaking to? Why don't I have some empathy for them instead of needing to gloat? See, I think that what you said is true some of the time, and sometimes is the start rationalization of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's insanity, really. It's another form of insanity.
It is.
And, you know, one of the things I've been working with, have you read that book, Zero Limits?
No.
Well, it's about this psychiatrist who became a director of a mental a facility for criminally insane in Hawaii, and he didn't know what to do. When he went in, there were a lot of really, really violent patients. There were employees were scared to come to work. There was a lot of absenteeism, a lot of turnover. And so he just sat in his office with all the files and read all the files, and he asked God, he said, what should I do? What should I do? It's like, this is so overwhelming. What should I do? And God said, ask each person to forgive you. And there are four steps. I'm so sorry. And what I get about that, Patricia, is it's like the thing from The Course in Miracles that says the mind that has forgiven itself can only look on gentle sights. And when he's saying, I'm so sorry, please forgive me, he's really saying, I'm sorry I saw you as less than the God being you are. I'm sorry I believe that somebody could be criminally insane. I'm sorry I believe this is a possibility on the face of the earth.
That's all you are.
Pardon me?
Or that was all that they were.
Yes. And then you say, thank you, I love you. And he did that over and over. And each person there was healed. Each person there that was an inmate, no matter how violent they were, they went home well and healthy and a contributing member of society. And so I have been doing that with George Bush. I've been doing that with the war. I've been doing that with when I hear there's torturous conditions for people or animals. I say, please forgive me for distorting the pure, clear energy of divine love that comes down to us pure and clear and unqualified with anything. It's like, for me, it's like asking forgiveness of God, that I saw God's creations as less than God perfection. And I found that to be a really powerful, powerful thing. And I can't say it's, you know, affected the war yet, but I am saying we're not helpless, and we can call for Ascended Master intervention. We can call on the law of forgiveness. We can call on the violet flame, and we can call the angels in their legions.
That's what works for you, Iris, and it's wonderful, and it's the metaphor for you to shift your energy.
Uh-huh.
For anyone that works for, that's fabulous.
Okay, so I want to hear your creative way of dealing with this.
Well, my feeling is that if that works, do it, because it shifts the focus, and that's what we're really working on. There will come a time where you won't have to be thinking of particularly angels or violet flames. You will be a violet flame. You will be the angel, because it's really, in a matter-of-fact way, how you think. It will become natural. It won't be such an effort. And even when you get one part down, there'll be new things that are an effort, and you can do it with them. But what I'm trying to do is make it very normal for people to really consider softening their hearts and expanding their minds, to see that we are all on the same journey, and that there is a change in consciousness happening, and that we contribute to the pain in the world when we demonize people or animals or even nature. We even believe in a demon, because demons are the name we gave to the part of God we hated.
Yes, and what we need to heal is the hatred.
And we need to see that what demons are our own disowned energy. And until we claim it back and make it healthy, it's so unbearable to face that we have to keep projecting it out there somewhere.
They are doing it.
They are doing it. We do it, like Wilson used to say.
What?
Wilson used to say, the devil made me do it.
Yeah, oh, God, I loved him. And Geraldine.
It's so funny.
Oh, my God.
It hit a note. I mean, it was an archetypal phrase. And, you know, it's not out there really now, but at that time, it really made people have to laugh.
Well, and Tammy Faye used to talk about her shopping demons.
The what?
For shopping demons.
Shopping demons. You know, shopping demon is the compulsion to get more stuff to make things okay. Because all your conditioning is that if you have the right stuff or enough stuff, you'll be okay.
It's
a mindless conditioning that's driven by a sincere desire for things to be okay.
Yep.
What we need to do is just notice a little deeper that what makes things okay is loving our children, paying attention to what they need, loving ourselves and our friends, paying attention to what we need. That doesn't mean you have to drop everything. Sometimes you can't. That doesn't mean you have to be perfect in every moment. But when you actually consider, I mean, I have a friend who's having some problems, and I keep wanting to go see her, and for a variety of reasons, it's just really almost physically not possible for me to do it. And yet, I love her. I love her family. I think of her. I spend nights sending healing, talking to them. It isn't that I don't love them. I may not do what they think I should do or go meet the picture, but the truth is I genuinely care. Now, there's other people who go to great lengths to do all the appearances, but they don't really care.
Oh, yeah, they give that instead.
Yeah.
You know, I have that with people, and another friend of mine has that with people that sort of they have, no, I really love them, so then they try to box me into their picture of a friend or relative, you know, you'll be here, you know, here's your schedule.
Yeah.
And my commitment cosmically, in other words, one of the things is I don't babysit.
You don't what?
I don't babysit.
Oh, uh-huh.
I don't babysit. I don't take care of babies, and I don't care whose they are. I'm in the cosmic business of transforming the way all babies are taken care of, and that takes the majority of my time and energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, hold the line on loving and not being the picture. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, everybody has to do the thing they're able to do. And it's different things that people are able to do.
Yeah.
It may be that your talent is not to actually be with the baby and take care of the baby.
Nope.
You can inspire people to think about it or to do better or to understand something. But, you know, we do need to give everybody a break to do the thing they can do.
Yes.
And on the other hand, we also need to ask for what we need. And, you know, if five people in a row can't give it, maybe the sixth person can.
Yes.
So it's okay to ask. It's okay for somebody to say no. And it's okay to say yes. It's more loose than the rejection, acceptance, black and white, flip-flop, you know, dualistic thinking that's so short.
Yeah, and, you know, I really want people's honest, true, authentic yes or no. I want to be able to trust people's yes because they will say no, Patricia.
Exactly.
You know, I want authenticity.
Yes.
More than anything else. And I think that, you know, the thing you're saying also is that now for all of us, it is so important that each of us fulfill the part that we can do, that we're here to do, in divine timing and order, that it's important not to get lost in those appearances. Like,
yes.
I've had people tell me, a lot of people tell me, well, this is what grandmothers do. This is how grandmothers are.
Mm.
And I'm sorry that they don't have my picture there in the dictionary. That is not my job description.
Yeah.
And I think it's really, really, really claiming yourself, too. And, I have people, like you were talking about, that I don't see for 20 years, and I have a cousin that way. But, you know, when we're together, we make up for all 20 years in about 2 or 3 hours. We love each other completely, and then we're done for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, how does your path and your mission and your dharma match up with others? And it's kind of a tricky line to walk, isn't it?
Well, sometimes it's tricky and sometimes it's just breathtakingly, wonderfully easy. And, you know, and I think both of those things are true. And when it's easy, well, embrace it and enjoy it. And when it's difficult, you know, float around, soften up, listen, let things go, be willing to embrace, see what happens. Let, you know, when organic things are growing, they don't grow in a straight line. Every single thing is a twist and turn.
It's not your plan, is it?
That's the way it is. And, you know, I always think of the image. I've seen many videos of almost microscopic viewing of the hair cells on plants growing between the tiny little particles in the soil. And the little root grows out this way, and then it wraps around a little tiny grain of sand, and then it grows up the other way, and it turns to the left, and then it goes down, and then it turns right.
Yes.
All of those little turns, as each cell, another cell is born onto the tip, and then another one, and then another one. And this is what locks the tree in the ground and what causes all those little filaments to get nutrients and have more contact with the earth. And it does many things. And it's one cell at a time. It's one moment at a time. It's facing the reality the tip of that little root hair is facing, you know, what's actually in the soil right there. And it's a metaphor or an analogy of what we really do have to do in life is have the go forward with goodwill and authenticity and work it out. Take the bends and turns.
Yeah, and with the softness of water, go around the rocks.
Exactly.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Keep on trucking, eyes on the prize.
You know, it's the receptive. That the, you know, Lao Tzu said that the soft conquers the hard.
Yes.
The yielding conquers the resistant is a fact.
Yes.
Known by all men, yet utilized by none.
Until this very day. But in the past, in the olden days, it was like that, and we hardly remember that anymore because now we are doing it.
Yeah,
that's the result that I choose.
Yeah.
That's the result. That's what I'm asking for all of us. And being with you is just a heart-softening, opening experience, Patricia, and I'm just so thankful you were here with us today. And is that 1 minute, Alyssa, or am I over, according to you? Does that mean get off now, or can I wind it up? I think that was the, just tell people how they can reach you, Patricia.
Well, you know, it's all easier than we think, and it's the only thing that makes it hard is it's different than we think.
Yep. Tell people how they can reach you. We have to go.
Yeah. Okay. My pleasure to be with you, Lisa, and your listeners.
Pardon?
I said my pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
And tell people how they can reach you.
Oh, go to patriciasun.com. It's the easiest way. Or you can email me at ps@patriciasun.com, which is also at the website. There's a phone number at the website.
Okay. My darling, will you come back?
I will come back, sure.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, and thank you for listening. God bless you, and may all your dreams come true and be 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible.
Oh, my goodness. Right back to you.
Mm-hmm.